content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book, The First Time Gardener, Growing Vegetables, by Jessica Sowards. And we left off last time in Chapter 6, Grow Something Lovely, Designing a Captivating Space. And we also left off at the topic, Great Companions for a Diversely Planted Garden. And these are some of the plants that we can put in between our vegetables. And the next one is common thyme, also called garden thyme or culinary thyme. Common thyme is a perennial in all but the coldest climates and can even be preserved through the winter in very cold areas with a bit of frost fabric or a cold frame. This hardy herb, when allowed to establish, will produce a mass of little white flowers every year, attracting pollinators and beneficial insects to the garden. Marigolds. My first exposure to companion planting was as a child when I stood in the vegetable garden of a family friend and asked to pick a marigold. The gardener allowed it and explained to me that the marigolds were interspersed through his crops to scare off bad bugs. Marigolds are the most commonly known companion plant, and in adulthood, I've come to understand they aren't as scary as I thought as a child. However, they do produce a nectar that attracts beneficial insects to the garden. These insects may prey on aphids and beetles. And here, marigolds are also said to be a good trap crop, luring beetles away from your food crops to feed on the flowering plants instead. At the very least, marigolds do attract pollinators and add color and beauty to the garden. They are very frost tender. Start indoors 6 weeks before the last frost and transplant when nighttime temperatures are above freezing, or direct sow after threat of frost has passed. The favorite varieties are Cracker Jack, Cupid Mix, Spun Orange, and Mr. Majestic Double. Another one is mint. The first thing to know before planting mint is that, like many herbs in its family, lemon balm and catnip, to name a couple of cousins, mint is a bully. It will overtake about any space it's placed in, reseed, grow into walkways, and make you rue the day you ever let it into your garden. Maybe that's dramatic, but seriously, contain your mint. They said when it's been given a container or a raised bed of its own, mint is a lovely plant to have in the garden. It is a favorite of pollinators and beneficial insects and plant, and puts out a strong fragrance that may confuse or deter rabbits and deer. It grows prolifically and makes for a great addition to a cold drink on a hot summer day. The excess, and there will be excess, can be dried for hot tea. Mint is very hardy and is best started from seed indoors and transplanted in spring. It can withstand a mild freeze. Sweet alyssum. Sweet Alyssum is actually a member of the Brassica family, a cousin to kale and cabbage. The entire plant is edible, including the flowers, and has a very peppery and pungent flavor. It grows prolifically and reseeds, so plant it in an area where you won't mind it coming back the next season, or be prepared to tear it out. Direct sow in spring, 4 weeks before the last frost, or start indoors 6 weeks before and transplant. Sweet Alyssum is frost hardy and wildly fragrant, covering the ground with low-growing, abundant white flowers. These flowers work as a living mulch due to their root partitioning growing habit. This means their roots do not compete with neighbors, simply growing around the roots of other plants. Sweet Alyssum also attracts and creates a habitat for beneficial insects, feeding pollinators and supporting the presence of insects that prey on pests. And our next topic is what to consider for neighboring plants. Though I don't think your garden layout will make or break your gardening year, I do think there are some questions to ask when assigning plant placement for best results. Number one, how much water does this plant need? Some plants are very thirsty, and some can thrive on less water. Avoid putting thirsty plants right beside each other. They will compete for resources, and you'll find yourself watering a lot more than you would if they had a less demanding neighbor. High water needs or thirsty plants are squash, summer and winter varieties, cucumbers, peppers, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, onions, and eggplants. Medium water needs are tomatoes, cantaloupes, and muskmelons or watermelons. And low water needs or drought-tolerant plants are beans, sunflowers, mustard greens, root vegetables, and herbs. How heavy does this plant feed? And that's number two. If heavy feeders are planted near one another, they likely won't suffer. However, the soil might be left more depleted than you would like. If you knowingly assign heavy feeders to share a garden bed, make sure to add some aged manure or compost halfway through the season. Heavy feeders are squash of all types, including pumpkins, melons, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, cucumbers, broccoli, cauliflower, kohlrabi, and corn. Light feeders are root vegetables, herbs, chard, arugula, beans, peas, and okra. Note, beans and peas are actually nitrogen fixers. They convert nitrogen and fix it in their roots. This nitrogen isn't released into the soil until the plants die, so their companion plant power isn't fully realized until the season after they are planted. Plant beans next to heavy feeders and at the end of the season. Cut the bean plants off at the soil, leaving the roots. They will decompose and place some of the nitrogen used by the heavy feeding neighbors. Number three, how large will this plant grow, and will it hinder the light needs of its neighbors? Consider the direction the sun rises and sets, and consider its path across your garden. Make sure to consider this when planting tall plants. Either plant tall plants toward the back of the garden or use their height to your advantage by planning for the shadows that might be cast. Plants that cast a shadow. Tall plants, or plants that require a tall trellis, are large sunflower varieties like mammoth or titan, okra, trellised winter squash, trellised pole beans, noodle beans, and trellised melons or corn. Plants that enjoy being in a shadow are cucumbers, lettuce, kale, onions, and garlic. Our next topic is why creating a captivating garden space matters. There's another reason why I encourage a diversely planted garden that is full of living, buzzing things. Over my years of teaching people about gardening, I've learned that there is one single most important mindset to establish. It may sound silly at first, but I've watched many new gardeners blossom when they embrace this stance. You have to fall in love with your garden. Passion about the garden, a drive to grow food, interest in what is growing, and an overall sense of desire to be in the garden you create will overcome any struggles or discouragement you may face. If it doesn't become something you enjoy, hot summer days, persistent pests, and dread of the physical demand will steal your harvest. These tips may seem whimsical at first, but I call them insurance against yourself. Putting these things in place at the start of the season, when you are excited and motivated to garden, means that you will still be invested when the hard work or problems come along. I love when I get to meet people at conferences and conventions, and the first thing they do is show me photos of their garden spaces. I know then these are not just people who decided to try and grow food. These are people who put effort into creating a garden and loving it well. I know these are gardeners who will not easily give up. And our next topic is how to create a garden you'll love. Number one, choose a design that appeals to you. When you search gardening resources, you'll see any number of garden styles. These different styles will appeal to different people. You do not have to plant a garden that grows in neat and orderly rows if you prefer the look of a wild, rambling garden. You don't have to plant beds with a hodgepodge of plants if you love the look of neat, tidy rows. People are different, and the garden should reflect the gardener. Really consider what you enjoy when you look at a garden, and no matter what you read or what other people say, just plant the garden that inspires you. You should love your space because you are the one who has to work in it. Choose a style of garden you'll be proud of. You will be much more likely to give it your attention. 2. Make it your favorite place. Decorate your garden. Paint a sign to hang at the gate. Buy the garden gnome wearing pajamas. Hang the wind chimes, all 10 of them. Give your garden a name. This is not silly advice. This is not arbitrary. Take ownership of your space. It matters. There are going to be gardening years that are more productive than others. Pests change year to year. The weather is unpredictable. You will have things pop up in your life that may hinder your ability to garden to the extent you might like. Life happens, and sometimes the productivity of your garden may falter. You have to want it anyway. If your only goal in the garden is to get food, you will quit when productivity is low. If you invest a little bit of your heart, though, you'll go back even when you get off track. Even my worst years yielded lots and lots of food, but only because I was too in love with the garden to quit when the trouble started. My garden's name is Beulah, and she is my most favorite place to be in the whole world. There have been times in my journey that I've given up when the weeds got exhausting and the plants got sick. I've given up when I couldn't keep up. Actually, to be honest, I quit gardening at least a handful of times a season, but I never can make myself quit going to the garden. Then, while I'm there in my favorite place, I end up pulling a few weeds and making a few plans, and the next thing I know, I'm a gardener again. Enjoying the act of gardening might not be enough to stick with it. It might not be enough to plant the next wave in summer or to start seeds for fall. You can love gardening and grow a garden once a year in spring. But if you love the garden itself, you won't ever be able to quit for long. 3. Growing something lovely. I'd like to prepare you for a possible scenario in your early gardening endeavor. Some hot summer morning, you're sweating buckets in the garden, picking squash bugs off your row of yellow summer squash. Every time you think you're done, you see another. They seem endless. They're itching all over because squash plants do that sometimes. You go inside and shower off before heading to the grocery store. On the way to the store, you realize you got a little more sun than you meant to. Your face starts burning a bit, and you realize you have a catch in your shoulder for being bent over so long. You arrive at the store, you walk in, and there at the front, in a lovely display of yellow squash for dirt cheap, because naturally they are in season. You do a bit of quick math and realize you spent your whole morning working to save $3 worth of squash. You consider quitting gardening. I realize this is dramatic, but this was the exact situation that led me to heirloom gardening. There's a lot of value in homegrown food. Modern agriculture is so dependent on chemical fertilizers and pesticides, even the ordinary varieties of vegetables, when grown at home, are superior to their conventionally grown counterparts. However, it can be very discouraging to work very hard for something that could be so easily obtained. These days, I have let yellow squash back into my garden. However, I also love growing things that I cannot get elsewhere. If you don't put in the work, I'll never get to experience eating these foods. And here is a list of my favorite varieties that can't be bought at the grocery store. And Black Beauty tomatoes, Blue Gold Berry tomatoes, and Barry's Crazy Cherry tomatoes. And she has a whole list of purple potted pole beans, Kigari melons, purple magnolia tendril peas, golden beetroot, watermelon radish, Mexican sour gherkins, Manjinji sweet peppers, pumpkin spice jalapenos, pineapple ground cherries, ping tong eggplants, and rapin broccoli rabi. And number four, include a chair in your garden. My routine throughout the summer months is to make a cup of tea every evening and head out to the gardens. There are times for work when I am donned in work clothes and carrying a big bottle of ice water. During these times, I have to do lists of tasks: planting, mulching, pruning, harvesting, cleaning. The dusky evenings aren't for that. They are for observing. Scattered around my garden are seeded areas and stumps that serve as a place to rest and observe. Every garden needs a chair or a sitting stump or some space to rest. Be intentional about observing your garden. Have your morning coffee or your evening herbal tea there. The best medicine for the garden will always, always be the gardener. Your presence among your plants means that problems will be seen, weeds will be pulled, and low-hanging branches will be staked out of harm's way. Pests will be spotted. Unripe fruits will be anticipated. Drooping leaves will be noted. And plants will be watered. And the garden as a whole will be praised and admired. Your eyes being on your garden every day, even for just a short while, makes a huge difference in the success of your gardening year. And the next chapter is number 7, the nitty-gritty for garden management. And roll up your sleeves, prepare for battle, hum your war tune. Okay, you don't actually have to have a war tune, but whatever it takes to get your head in the game, do that. When you planned your garden through the winter, marveling at the lovely color photos of seed catalogs, you probably had a general hope of how it was going to go. Maybe you envisioned baskets of colorful produce on your kitchen table. Maybe you imagined picking those lovely leaves and roots and fruits you saw in the catalogs. You probably did not daydream about the day you would find your kale had seemingly turned to lace overnight, or the first time you came across a massive green caterpillar munching on your unripe tomatoes. Gardening is not all happy harvests and dreamy early morning walks between soft-lit, lushly growing rows. There are definitely those things, but a good deal of caring for a garden involves regular maintenance, early intervention, and a watchful eye. The next topic, and the first one in this chapter, is organic versus conventional methods. I am an organic gardener, and the methods taught in this book are natural growing methods. I did not always garden organically. I, like many other new gardeners, used the products that were marked to gardeners without realizing I was putting harmful toxins on the food I was growing for my family. The first year, I resolved to use only organic methods. I was amazed at how much life I observed in my garden. I would sit out in the mornings, snacking on food I'd just picked off the vine, and watch the butterflies and bees congregate on the zinnias. Seeing how much the ecosystem of my garden thrived without regular applications of harmful chemicals, and seeing my kids snack on food without concern about what might be on it, I realized just how much healthier my food and garden would be if I swore off the toxic pesticides for good. That is when I became an organic gardener. I have never regretted that decision. I truly believe growing organically is the richest and most rewarding approach to gardening. I will always teach organic methods because I simply believe they are better. However, I do not condemn gardeners who choose conventional routes of pest control. I am of the mind that a garden grown in your yard is the best possible way to source your food, even if it is conventionally grown. When transport and production fuels are taken into consideration, the negative impact of conventionally grown backyard garden is significantly less than purchasing conventionally grown produce at a store. If you come to the decision to put chemicals on your garden, just make sure you fully understand how the product is designed to be used. Understand that chemicals designed to kill pests also kill beneficial insects. Never apply these chemicals in the morning when honeybees are foraging. Avoid spring blossoms whenever possible, and always thoroughly wash your food before eating it. And I'm just going to put a note in here that I did do organic gardening myself this year, and it's easy. It really is. You don't need chemicals. And my crop, the first year of gardening, was wonderful. So try it. Chemicals are not necessary on our food if it can be avoided. And thank you for listening. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And I hope you'll join us again for our next podcast on Out in the Garden. Thank you.